Vivaldi's Winter Largo awakens us for the winter spirit, quite appropriate for this New Year time. And what a pleasure to start the new year by coming together here on Cambridge 105 Community Radio in Cambridge for another hour of Evening Under Lamplight, the show that invites you to attend. I'm Robert Louis Abrahamson, and I welcome you to the show and raise a glass to toast many more such comings together at Evening Under Lamplight in the coming year. Now, this is the time of the year when we can find ourselves stuck. For one thing, many of us have had this time off, that downtime between, say, Christmas Eve and the day after New Year. Then suddenly, the new year and the new working week calls us to resume the life and the work we had been engaged with before the festivities. Our bodies, and perhaps our souls too, just want to rest. They remember the primeval virtue of hibernation, of taking time off in this dark period just to let things settle and prepare for what may come next. But then it becomes really hard to get ourselves going again to face what may come next. We just want to stay in hibernation. But we are called out of it. And how do we respond to that calling? How do we release ourselves from this stuck place, this rut we have been indulging ourselves in? That's the theme we'll attend to this evening under lamplight. I think we might see three different ways to be stuck. We can be too tired or too lazy to move on. We can be too proud or too fearful to take the necessary risks to move on. Or we can be so confused that we become paralyzed and cannot see which way to turn and find our way blocked by forces we feel we cannot conquer. Okay? Three ways for us to attend to here. So, let's start with the first. What about those who are too tired or lazy to move on? I suppose this also includes those with hangovers, too wiped out to do very much at all. We could think of lots of examples, I'm sure, but we'd be hard put to find something as outrageous as the Ray Davies song we're going to hear. He's not concerned with epic moments of difficulty, but simply with that everyday moment when we get stuck at the beginning of the day, just too worn out, too infirm, in fact, to see any chance of getting through the next few hours. Ray's song, Is There Life After Breakfast?, celebrates this rut we find ourselves in at breakfast, as we see nothing ahead of us in the coming day or nothing we desire to embrace. We're a wreck. But Ray sees how to get out of this. You just pick yourself up and give yourself a good talking to. Lift yourself out of the doldrums. Make yourself a cup of tea. Drag your emotions out of the gutter. Don't wallow in self-pity. When you wake up, all of a fluster, thinking life has passed you by, give yourself a kick up the backside. Jump out of bed and punch the sky. It's part of the irony that he should seriously propose something so mundane and cliched as this solution. But who knows? Maybe this little bit of silly tenderness to ourselves is just the thing to give us that needful boost in the right direction.
Give yourself a kick up the backside. Jump out of bed and punch the sky. Is there life after breakfast, full of possibilities? Is there life after breakfast? Yes, there is. After breakfast, so don't live in
Just because all of the plumbing isn't all it used to be. Turn the tap, see, a little bit's coming. That must make you feel relieved. Don't turn into a total embarrassment to your friends and family. Get out of bed, the whole day's ahead, so take the pills and drink your tea. And there we are. A simple pep talk to get us unstuck in the morning when we just can't crank it up any further. It's from Ray Davies' 2005 album, Other People's Lives. But this kind of stuck is basically physical. We're just physically not up to it and feel defeated. We next have to look at a deeper sense of being stuck. I said earlier that this is the time of year when we may find ourselves stuck, and this is true in a holistic way, as we realize when we see that the Chinese healing paradigm perceives winter as the time of waiting, even a time of gestation. We are stuck in the same way that a seed is stuck in the ground, just waiting for the time of new growth. You can see better what I mean from this meditation from my album Journey Through the Seasons. This is the winter meditation. Let RLA tell us what we need to consider here. Winter. Before spring, we first face that long-expected winter. The leaves have all fallen. The world is dark and cold. All is frozen. No light. No warmth. 'Tis the year's midnight, and it is the day's. The sun is spent. And now his flasks send forth light squibs no constant rays. The world's whole sap is sunk. The general balm the hydroptic earth hath drunk, whither, as to the bed's feet, life is shrunk, dead and interred. Colors have disappeared. All is merging to deep blue or blackness. The mystery of emptiness, of the unknown. The element is water, the feminine yin world of chaos, darkness, cold, wetness, confusion. The womb where new life waits, not yet born. The waters of pre-birth, touching us on all sides, but never solid, not allowing us to grasp any secure holds. We float as the waters move us, passive, submerged. The organs associated with this season are the kidneys, regulating the water in the body, storing our ancestral energy, holding what we have received from our parents until the time for these gifts to be born in our lives. This is a holding time, a time for storing up and waiting. Our only light is the magical feminine moon, casting uncertain shadows, pulling the waters that surround us here, controlling the tides, sweeping us out to sea, taking us we know not where. The negative emotion is fear. It's too dark to see. We have lost control. Only the fluid water and reflected moonlight, distorting everything. We understand nothing. We can make contact with nothing. No wonder we're afraid. Or a different kind of water. Snow. Colorless and obliterating everything. Threatening to smother all we know. Snow falling and night falling fast, oh fast, in a field I looked into going past. And the ground almost covered smooth in snow, but a few weeds and stubble showing last. The woods around it have it, it is theirs. All animals are smothered in their lairs. I am too absent-spirited to count. The loneliness includes me unawares. And lonely as it is, that loneliness will be more lonely ere it will be less. A blanker whiteness of benighted snow with no expression, nothing to express. They cannot scare me with their empty spaces between stars where no human race is. I have it in me so much nearer home to scare myself with my own desert places. If we open to this deep winter energy, fear can become transformed into its positive aspect of stillness, quiet acceptance, and openness. If we move at all, it is with that quiet gentleness we use when making our way across a furnished room in the dark. Sensitive, open, tentatively feeling our way, not rushing confidently through the room as we would in the light. We are listening, alert and still in a silent night, holy night, waiting for what will be revealed, mindful, attentive, not trying to comprehend, motionless in the midst of the emptiness. The night is darkening round me, the wild winds coldly blow, but a tyrant spell has bound me and I cannot go. The giant trees are bending their bare boughs, weighed with snow, The storm is fast descending, and yet I cannot go. Clouds beyond clouds above me, wastes beyond wastes below. But nothing drear can move me. I will not, cannot go. That immobility, held fast by some tyrant spell, feels like all things conspire against us and keep us from moving on. But we do not give in to the despair. I will not, cannot go. I know it is the time for staying here, waiting in stillness and darkness for what will come next. The long winter night. The long winter night seems endless. When will it be day? No flame in the lamp or charcoal in the fireplace. Lying in bed, listening to the sound of the freezing rain. To an old man, dreams come easy. I let my thoughts drift. The room is empty, and both the sake and the oil are used up. The long winter night. This long night of our dying is necessary preparation. Inside this new love, die. Your way begins on the other side. We hold on, knowing that we do not know what comes next, only that something comes next. All goes onward and outward, and nothing collapses, and to die is different from what anyone supposed, and luckier. And then the growing anticipation. My heart beats faster and faster, and I cannot sleep. Tomorrow will be the first day of spring.
There was the winter meditation from my CD Journey Through the Seasons, Meditations on the Five Chinese Healing Energies. You can learn more about the CD at www.journeythroughtheseasons.com. It's a pleasing, well-developed site just to stop in and visit. See you there. The meditation featured poems by John Donne, Robert Frost, Emily Bronte, Ryokan, Rumi, and Walt Whitman. The music is by Neil Henry. Oh, and speaking about Neil Henry, I just went the other day to see him on stage at the Theatre Royal in Northampton in the Christmas show of Alice in Wonderland. It was a wonderful show, full of witty and talented performances. Of course, it really wasn't a version of Alice in Wonderland at all, but just a takeoff, using some of the characters and situations. And it had a different theme from the original. In this production, the point of the show was to teach Alice, a pretty, solemn, timid, and self-effacing girl, the importance of letting herself go. And you can see how this fits into our theme. In fact, it nicely illustrates the second kind of stuckness we mentioned at the beginning. Alice is too proud and too fearful to take the risks needed in order to get moving in the Wonderland world she finds herself in. She keeps being told that she needs to learn that silly does not mean stupid. She has to learn that one way of getting unstuck is to lighten up. G.K. Chesterton said that angels fly because they take themselves lightly. Alice needed to learn to take herself lightly so she could begin to fly. I'm not sure how doing something silly will help, for instance, get your bank deficit unstuck, but perhaps taking a risk is the equivalent of a silly action. Are you too proud to make a fool of yourself? Are you too afraid to dare to do something unexpected? Well, that's your choice. Remaining painfully stuck or taking that leap of faith into the silliness of the risk? The ego is proud or fearful, and only the ego is keeping you stuck. Once again, we find ourselves in need of transformation beyond the ego.
looking daft is something we should all be proud to do. That's a line from the show. Looking daft is something we should all be proud to do. See, I sat there, conspicuous, I'm afraid, in the second row, taking a few notes. A few notes just to share with you, dear listener. Oh, and before we move on from this topic, let me remind you that Alice in Wonderland is in performance at the Theatre Royal in Northampton until January 8th. If you're anywhere near there, it's worth making the effort to stop in and see it. You'll recognize Neil Henry, dressed as the magical Rabbitino, alias the White Rabbit, mixing with the crowds before the show. If you see him, tell him you're there because you heard about it from Evening Under Lamplight. You'll get a special magic trick if you mention the show. And speaking of being afraid to go on and take risks, and speaking about being willing to do silly things, where else could we go better than to Fraggle Rock and this song, sung by Gobo before he embarks on a perilous journey, getting himself unstuck by lightening himself with the brave silliness of Catch the Tail by the Tiger.
No one knows where we're going. No one knows where we've been. Strangers follow us. Dangers fall on us. Life plays tricks and they're mean. Only one thing can save us. Only one thing will do. Stand up nice and straight. Don't capitulate. Courage lives and it's you. Catch a tail by the tiger. Take the horns by the bull. A bird in need is a friend indeed. So pull the eyes over the wool.
Gobo, I think you got it backwards. Well, the saying is that you gotta catch a tiger by the tail.
Sure, if you want to do it the easy way. On the other hand, if you really want bravery, then you gotta catch a tail by the tiger. Take the horns by the bull. A bird in need is a friend indeed.
So pull the eyes over the wool.
Steely gaze in the sunrise. Lonesome walk in the dawn. Sometimes lonely, but living only for truth when truth may be gone. Danger lurks at the crossroads. Shadows loom on the wall. Sounds behind us and hounds will find us. And death and taxes and all. So
catch a tail by the tiger. Take the horns by the bull. A bird in need is a friend indeed.
It's always good to have a Fraggle Rock song to cleanse the palate here on Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, community radio in Cambridge, with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. Attending with you to ways of getting unstuck at this beginning of the new year. And now we move on to the third kind of stuck, a paralysis of the mind. There are many forms this kind of paralysis can take. Sometimes our mind is so caught up in our own inadequacies that we simply cannot move on. We are filled with self-reproach. We see how little we have reached out to others, and like Cinderella in the ashes, we just retreat from life. We all have these moments, though we know that for some these moments become prolonged and crippling. This is the situation depicted in Dylan's beautiful song, What Good Am I? It's a very simple structure, four quatrains with a bridge between the third and fourth. Each quatrain begins and ends with, What good am I? As though stuck in that self-reproach, going round in circles, not getting anywhere. Here are the words. What good am I if I'm like all the rest? If I just turn away when I see how you're dressed? If I shut myself off so I can't hear you cry? What good am I? What good am I if I know and don't do? If I see and don't say? If I look right through you? If I turn a deaf ear to the thundering sky? What good am I? What good am I while you softly weep, and I hear in my head what you say in your sleep, and I freeze in the moment like the rest who don't try. There's the paralysis, isn't it? Freezing in the moment. And I freeze in the moment like the rest who don't try. What good am I? What good am I then to others and me if I've had every chance and yet still fail to see if my hands are tied? Must I not wonder within who tied them and why and where must I have been? What good am I if I say foolish things and I laugh in the face of what sorrow brings? And I just turn my back while you silently die. What good am I?
What good am I? If I'm like all the rest. If I just turn away when I see how you're dressed. If I shut myself off so I can't hear you cry. If I see and don't say, if I look right through you, if I turn a deaf ear to the thunder in the sky,
Isn't that a delicate ending? That slow fade out over a minute long, almost a quarter of the whole song. Hesitating, continuing, taking perhaps those few tentative steps that might get him unstuck and out of being frozen in the moment like the rest who don't try. Yes, that was Bob Dylan, What Good Am I, from an album, Oh Mercy. But now it's time for something deeper, literally. We must descend with Dante into the inferno and attend to an important moment when Dante became stuck because his reason lost control of the situation. And then, once he let go of his reliance on reason and looked to something higher, he became unstuck and was able to move on. The first time Dante found himself stuck was at the beginning of his journey, lost in the Selva Oscura, the dark woods. He tried to climb up the hill towards the shining sun, up to heaven, but was held back by three aggressive beasts blocking his way. Dante thought he could become unstuck by taking a direct route, but suddenly Virgil appeared on his side to tell him that the only way to become unstuck was to turn around and take the hard, indirect way downwards through hell first. Before we can move on, we have to examine our own hellish nature to learn what deficiencies inside us are blocking us from going forward. And so begins that journey, Dante following Virgil, who symbolizes Dante's reason. Dante and Virgil pass through the regions of outer hell, where they see the souls representing the sins of excess and indulgence in things they should have avoided. The lustful, such as Semiramis, who allowed her sexual appetite to influence the laws she established for her country, or Paolo and Francesca, who gave into the passion they felt for each other, even though she was married to his brother, and now they are eternally stuck together. No getting unstuck for them. They pass the gluttonous, whose obsession with food and other pleasures destroyed whatever social situation they were in, and now they're just stuck, wallowing in filthy, freezing mud, and then also those whose obsession with getting or spending money deflected them from any more purposeful activity in life, and now are fruitlessly rolling huge boulders in circles, crashing into the opposite numbers at the completion of every circle. Stuck in that routine forever. Then Dante and Virgil cross over the marsh of Styx, Styx, over the souls of those whose anger lost them their humanity. We spoke at some length about this episode in our evening under lamplight about springtime anger and kindness. And then, after the Styx, Dante and Virgil arrive at the gates of nether, or inner, or deeper hell. Dante views Nether Hell as a medieval city that is a place with walls running around and entrance only at certain gates, and he names the city Dis, coi gravi cittadin, col grande stuolo, with its teeming crowds and weighty citizens, as Robin Kirkpatrick puts it. The fire within the city casts a lurid backlight on the minarets rising above the walls, and along the walls themselves Dante spies, as best he can in the thick air of the place, mille da ciel piovuti, che stizzosamente decean, 1,000 who had rained from heaven, spitting in wrath, demanding to know what this living man was doing, trying to come through their gates. Picture these 1,000 devils, fallen angels from heaven, hissing and jeering in the red firelight against the murky sky. But it got worse when Virgil asked for a parley, the kind of thing Dante and his readers would have recognized as taking place when an enemy appears at the gate of a city under attack or siege. Okay, say the demons reluctantly, we'll speak with the dead one, Virgil, but the living one, Dante, now he'll have to stay back alone, or retrace his steps out of here if he wants to, or is able to. Don't leave me, Dante cries to Virgil, and Virgil reassures him that he will never leave him, and then he walks off. Or as Mark Musa puts it, Virgil says, I will not leave you in this underworld. With this, he walks away. He leaves me there. What has happened here? Dante faces these deeper sins, the sins not of excess, but of deliberate evil, violence, and what's worse, fraud. And his reason, that is, Virgil, deserts him. How can he face these things without his clear mind? How can we take this step onwards into the more difficult part of our journey if, without our reason, we cannot understand what is going on? We become stuck. And not only is Dante stuck, but Virgil is too. He returns from his parley with the demons baffled and downhearted. Hey, he murmurs, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. We're here on a divine mission. They have to let us through, don't they? But he covers his doubts and assures Dante that divine help must surely be on its way. But then suddenly, Dante's attention is arrested by the appearance up on those walls of three monsters, the Furies from Greek mythology, the creatures who enact the role of the guilty conscience, tormenting us constantly. Three blood-stained Furies from the depth of hell. In pose and body they were all three women, wound round about with water snakes bright green. Fringing their vicious brows, they bore as hair entwining snakes. Their curls were sharp-horned vipers. Each rent her breast with her own fingernails. With slapping palm, each beat herself and screamed. You can see what they mean when they speak about the vividness of medieval poetry. This is frightening, but the situation becomes dangerous when these monsters call Medusa to come up. Virgil is aware of the danger and quickly turns Dante around, telling him to shut his eyes, and he places his own hands on Dante's eyes to be sure they do not happen to light upon Medusa. Because, of course, one glance at Medusa and you turn to stone. And then you will be well and truly stuck. Virgil, that is, Dante's reasoning powers, can help prevent him from looking at the danger, but he is powerless to get him unstuck. All he can do is repeat the promise that help is coming sometime. Reason cannot save us from these deep assaults upon our soul. Only help from outside will avail. And let's stop at this point for a bit of music. I've gone on long enough. I've thought for a long time about what song might fit best at this point, some song that speaks of our reliance on a power outside ourselves to help get us unstuck. Here's what I've chosen for us here. How about George Jones, Take the Devil Out of Me? George Jones has been celebrated as one of the great country singers, and also celebrated for his four marriages, we always have to say, and once to Tammy Wynette, and for his wild habits of drinking and drugging, which often kept him stuck backstage, unable to go on and perform. He had moments of clarity when he saw he was stuck in these self-destructive habits, but he could not free himself. So here in this song, he adopts a kind of country gospel medium to ask for help, but perhaps that same promised help Dante and Virgil were waiting for. The song is a little light for this dark moment in the Inferno, but I don't think that will hurt us. But I just wonder how much conviction it carries, and how much it just echoes evangelical clichés for the sake of a nice tune. Well, we'll find out only by attending, so here, have a listen.
Oh, Jesus, please. Devil out of me. I've traveled far down this lonesome road. The devil, he's got me bent down so low. I just found out where I want to be. Oh, Jesus, please. Please take the devil out of me. I'm getting tired of living the same. I'm tired of keeping the devil for a friend. I want so badly to be set free. Oh, Jesus, please.
the devil out of me. Sin, because I let my dear Savior in. My Jesus told me that I was free. Oh, Jesus, thank you. You took the devil out of me.
Go, George Jones, take the devil out of me. Are we going to be able to return to Dante after that kind of break? Yes, of course. We are, as I've said before, quite flexible on Evening Under Lamplight. We left Dante turned away from Medusa, with Virgil covering Dante's eyes as a double protection against being turned to stone and being permanently stuck. But suddenly, there is a noise. A shattering resonance that scatters all the souls as it passes through them, or not quite through them. This being approaches us by walking on top of the Stygian marsh, con le piante asciutte, with dry feet, using his left hand to fan away the fetid air of the place. This is the messo da ciel, the one sent from heaven, the promised aid. He goes right up to the gate and, with the wand or short stick in his right hand, taps the gates and they open. Che non v'ebbe alcun retegno, Dante says, for nothing held those gates firm. Yes, isn't that a wonderful point? All that hesitation was unnecessary. The demons said they forbade him to come in, and both Dante and Virgil took them at their word, but the door was not locked all the time. All they had to do was give it a push and it would open. But such was the nature of the situation that they could not understand anything or take any control of events for themselves. Getting unstuck here required help from someone else. In our more sentimental age, we would expect some sort of encounter between Dante and this messo da ciel, who has released him from being stuck. But the poem gives us no such scene. The messo, an angel, presumably, does not even acknowledge Dante and Virgil. He scolds the demons for their futile resistance and then just goes off, with the look of someone gnawed and gathered up by care, though not the cares that here confronted him. His mind is elsewhere, still back in heaven, I suppose. He has a mission to do it here in hell, and he does it, but this is not the kind of thing to take up his concerns. In the larger scheme of things, our little moments of being stuck are very insignificant, though the help that has been promised us when we journey on our path is still generously available to us. And so Dante and Virgil pass through the gate into the city of Dis. What they discover next is perhaps for another occasion. Someday, you and I will come back to this. You know I can't keep away from Dante for long. So, what can we take away from this moment in the Inferno? We find Dante in a moment of despair. His reason cannot help him here, and he sees no way forward. We all know these moments, surely. The holiday bills and the groaning overdraft and credit cards all tempt us with demonic voices telling us we're in an economic recession and there's no way we can move forward to regain our financial footing. The medical report comes back with its technical terms describing something gone wrong in our blood, or our bones, or our immune system. give up. Your life's over. You've lost control of your body and there's nothing left to do. We've broken up a relationship. Nothing left in life. Or appropriately for this New Year's Day, we have to rise early and go back to the grindstone, the boring routine or the oppressive boss or the endless deadlines when all we want to do is lie a bit longer in bed. We cannot understand what's going on, caught in that winter energy of darkness that we heard about from the winter meditation. It's no mistake that the two words repeated throughout this section of the Inferno are rimanere and forse, to remain, and maybe. Maybe signifying that we can never know for sure just what is going on. Our Virgil reason is helpless here. But there is the promised help. The Messo d'Aciel, Robin Kirkpatrick says, suggests that for Dante there is a power that can intervene to save humanity from its own self-imposed confusions and make possible this advance towards salvation. That promised help, which may not at first be evident, but which comes when we turn from the stagnating face of Medusa, this is the way we get ourselves unstuck. How, in practical terms, does it save us from our financial crisis, or the onslaught of disease, or all the other paralyzing anxieties? Well, I don't know. No one can know in advance how each individual messo will appear, but what Dante's myth suggests is that the messo will not solve our problems, but just tap open the door we have perceived as being shut against us and allow us to proceed further. There are, I'm afraid, horrors lying ahead of us, but after all that comes the climb out of hell and up in the clean, clear daylight to our paradise home. Is this all? Are we naive to think we live in a benign universe where we are promised help on our journey? Of course we are free to think whatever we want, but if we open ourselves to all the wise and ancient myths, both folk myths and the literary myths like Dante's Divine Comedy, we will find the assertion that there is divine help coming to help us. These myths become our Virgil, assuring us that help is coming even when it seems very doubtful in the present circumstances. It's worth giving our assent to this. It is not soppy or sanctimonious religiosity, but spiritual wisdom that we all crave from somewhere very deep within us. And if we feel we cannot hold on to that, perhaps at least we can just keep trying. Even if we don't understand what's going on, and even if we find ourselves stuck, maybe it's enough to hold on to the half of a broken hope. The kind of thing that Stevenson speaks about in his poem, If This Be Faith, spoken in the midst of defeat, but refusing to give up the battle. Here's the poem. God, if this were enough, that I see things bare to the buff and up to the buttocks in mire, that I ask nor hope nor hire, nut in the husk, nor dawn beyond the dusk, nor life beyond death, God, if this were faith, having felt thy wind in my face spit sorrow and disgrace, having seen thy evil doom in Golgotha and Khartoum, and the brutes, the work of thine hands, fill with injustice lands and stain with blood the sea, if still in my veins the glee of the black night and the sun and the lost battle run, if, an adept, the iniquitous lists I still accept with joy, and joy to endure and be withstood, and still to battle and perish for a dream of good, God, if that were enough. If to feel, in the ink of the slough and the sink of the mire, veins of glory and fire run through and transpierce and transpire, and the secret purpose of glory in every part, and the answering glory of the battle fill my heart, to thrill with the joy of girded men, to go on forever and fail, and go on again, and be mauled to the earth, and arise, and contend for the shade of a word, and a thing not seen with the eyes, with the half of a broken hope for a pillow at night, that somehow the right is the right, and the smooth shall bloom from the rough. Lord, if that were enough. And from that poem, with its faith in the mere hope of some possible divine promise somewhere, a faint hope that keeps us going, keeps us from being stuck, from that it seems appropriate that we should finish with Leonard Cohen's If It Be Your Will. In his concert live in London, Leonard prefaced the song by telling us, "It was a while ago that, faced with some obstacles, I wrote a song, well, it's more of a prayer." In fact, it's a song on the subject of not being able to write a song. He feels stuck, but in expressing that very stuckness, he frees himself. It's also a song acknowledging that higher, benevolent presence who is in more control of things than we are. If it be your will that I speak no more, and my voice be still as it was before, I will speak no more. I shall abide until I am spoken for, if it be your will. If it be your will that a voice be true, from this broken hill I will sing to you. From this broken hill all your praises they shall ring, if it be your will to let me sing. From this broken hill, all your praises they shall ring, if it be your will to let me sing. If it be your will, if there is a choice, let the rivers fill, let the hills rejoice, let your mercy spill on all these burning hearts in hell, if it be your will to make us well. And draw us near, and bind us tight, all your children here in their rags of light, in our rags of light, all dressed to kill, and end this night, if it be your will, if it be your will.
If it be your will that I speak no more, and my voice be still as it was before, I will speak no more. I shall abide until I am spoken for, if it be your will. If it be your will that a voice be true, from this broken hill I will sing to you. From this broken hill all your praises they shall ring, your will to let me sing.
Burning hearts in hell.
near and bind us tight. All your children here in their rags of life, in our rags of life, all dressed to kill. And in this night, if it be your will, if it be your will.
And so we come to the end this evening under lamplight. A bit of champagne and ashes, and a few bites of Lembas, the sustaining elfin bread Galadriel gave to the Fellowship of the Ring, which kept them sustained in even the most sticking circumstances. And of course, when I speak of being too tired or lazy to move on, or of being too proud and fearful to be silly, or of being paralyzed and sitting with the half of a broken hope, of course I'm speaking about myself, as well as, I imagine, about you. And so we're all in it together. Okay, sure, this kind of thing is not what we usually expect to hear on the radio, but I'm pleased that Evening Under Lamplight gives us all something different. And thank you for all your support this year, and my warmest wishes as we move into the new year, stuck or unstuck. And we'll meet again at the end of January here on Cambridge 105, Cambridge's community radio, for the next Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson. And now, good night and Happy New Year. Oh, but don't forget, don't turn into a total embarrassment to your friends and family. Get out of bed, the whole day's ahead, so take the pills and drink your tea.